Well, I'm sorry to be here for the message part, but I am so glad to be here to see the wonderful, wonderful children and their participation, talent, enthusiasm. It is, it really is a special day to be here. But it's been, may I say, in the presence of the children, a hell of a week. And many adults are very sad, and many young people are very frightened and also sad. And I think that it's important for us to look at our world and to engage it with a very important attitude, and that is that we are not helpless. One of the most terrible feelings that people can get is a sense of having no choices, no options, no power in dealing with our environment. That our world is completely random and we are powerless to engage it or to protect ourselves, and the world is just terribly, horribly dangerous. Well, that's 100% half true. We have some tools for engaging our world emotionally. We have some ways of feeling a sense of security and safety. Not perfect security, not perfect safety, but with the use of reason and choices and being in touch with what is going on in our world and what's going on inside ourselves, we can make the world emotionally safer for all of us. What I don't want to talk about today, and will be happy to talk about and discuss on Tuesday, is the issue of guns and gun control. Obviously, guns kill people, and bullets kill people, and people with guns kill people, and they can be dangerous. So can cars, so can gasoline, so can lots of things in the world. It's a legitimate discussion and debate. The media's irresponsibility and its responsibilities is another important topic. The issues of mental health, of medication, of follow-up, the whole idea of outpatient committal, where somebody is released and able to go to school but has to check in and has to be on meds. That's a whole very interesting and very important societal discussion, but I want to speak to the emotions. It's been a very emotional week for me personally. I'm having an emotional kind of incarnation right now. On Thursday, I came downstairs to my wife at about 10 o'clock just as Grey's Anatomy was ending and said, "Honey, I think you better call 911. I have radiant chest pain." And given the fact that my father passed away at 56 and his father at 42, I had sat upstairs for a little bit trying to deny the reality, and denial is one of the greatest causes of death in men, because we sit there and say, "It's nothing, I don't need to do anything about it," and we miss the golden hour and we miss our chance. Reasonably, I thought it's probably indigestion. But those, even if the odds are long, the odds are important. And the question is, do you err on the side of getting help, even if you feel foolish that you're not having a coronary, which is a very strange position to be in, I want to tell you. I really hate to bother you folks. I hope it's really something. The problem, of course, is that everything is a coronary symptom for men, and almost everything for women. Chest pain, radiant chest pain, indigestion, something that you think is indigestion, back pain, something that processes itself as gas. There are so many indications that it's easy just to dismiss it. I want to say that it is very much the same thing when we're talking about killers and violence. There are so many indications. Was the person alone, or did they feel alone and left out? I'm not going to ask the kids if you ever feel alone and left out, because I know the answer. Sometimes you do. going to ask the adults, do you remember feeling alone and left out when you were in elementary school, in junior high school? Like, nobody would choose you for the team. Nobody would ever date you. That you were just never going to ever be kissed and you just wanted to hide out and disappear.
How do you know?
I was watching. Actually, I read about you on the net. Your Facebook profile is not pretty, Chris. I need to tell you that. When you are looking at the criteria, when they all go back and describe, well, he had all the warning signs, everybody at some point has one or two or three of the warning signs. Engaging in violent fantasy? Well, I still do. I've got the photon torpedo button on the dashboard of my car. Somebody cuts me off. I have very violent fantasies. Play video games. I'm not coordinated enough for the violent video games. Play Dungeons and Dragons when you were a kid, off in a fantasy land. Everything is an indication, and the truth is, most people, when you play the odds, most kids grow up to be, dare I say to the adults here, normal. It's a low bar. And to the kids, I want to say that your parents are probably as weird as you think they are and as weird as you sometimes think that you are. And actually, Chris, in that choir response, proved it as I was able to read the house. Everything is a criterion, and all dots are easy to connect once it happens. But what do we do? Well, what we do is we look at a couple of things. One of them is to reach out to people whom you see and feel and sense to be alone and to be rejected. It's not an absolute way of preventing madness, but it is a start to, when you see the person who is not talking, to try to reach out to the person that other kids say is weird. It sometimes doesn't work. And when it doesn't work, our responsibilities as human beings, whether old guys like me or young people like you, is to try to find help. That is not snitching. That is not busting. That is caring about somebody's life. It has happened to me on many occasions, and very recently, where somebody told me that they wanted to kill themselves and they wanted my help in doing that, in an act of depression, not as at the end of a disease mechanism, but just out of a sense of failure and depression. I had a responsibility to get this person help. When I told the psychiatrist who was treating him about the suicide, not simple threat, but the attempt to enlist me, my friend said to me, "But I thought that was in confidence. Why are you snitching on me? Why are you ratting on me?" And there is no confidence when somebody is a danger to themselves or others. The thing that we need to do for each other is to take a chance on somebody being angry at us so that they might live. I was willing to lose his friendship rather than risk losing his life. He did have to go into a locked ward. He had to, in fact, go twice. He was at the end of his rope, almost literally, and 5 months later, he is employed, he is back home, he is living successfully with his wife. Had I not made that connection, I don't believe any of those things would have happened. Did my reaching out and trying to get him help guarantee a good result? No, it doesn't. But what we are armed with is the ability to try to make a difference without a guarantee that we can. We are not helpless when we see somebody hurting and suffering. We can try to reach out first with our arms and with invitations to be with us. And when that doesn't work, and when our instincts tell us to be afraid, to try to get that person the help that they need. We might make mistakes, but make mistakes, as I did, on the side of life, on the side of being careful and not on the side of, oh, it's probably nothing. Nothing will come of it. It's easy to feel overwhelmed in a frightening world. There is violence. You know, cars crash, planes crash, there are wars, there are diseases. But you know something? When we use the tools of reason, we are extraordinarily safe. We are extraordinarily safe in our homes, in our cars, and in our schools. Yes, bad things happen, and we don't want to deny those things, but we also don't want our electronic connection to the world to make our worlds so frightening, so overwhelming, that we are coming out of places of fear all of the time. We wear seat belts because that is a reasonable precaution against a car crash. Most of us are safer in our churches, in our homes, and in our schools, and on our airplanes than we are coming to church, going to school, and riding to the airport. When we analyze our world and our choices, we have the tools of reason, of compassion, of adults that we can go to as adults, children whom we can question and offer ourselves as resources to both reach out and help those who are marginalized. It is sometimes very scary out there, but when we really look at the microcosm in which most of us live, we have a tremendous tool for being able to respond to that environment, and we should live mostly with a sense of security, aware of dangers, but not overwhelmed by those dangers. Because while we share this beautiful and, yes, fragile miracle, there is more beauty in most of our lives and more beauty in our environment and more positive and loving things that we can do with and for each other than there are dangers, prescient, imminent dangers to all of us. Let's not get fooled by all of the warning signs and all of the video games and all the rap, all important issues. Let's hang on to how much of a difference we make to each other in a sense of our security in this world. Let's hang on to the tools that we have to understand and evaluate and act in this big and powerful world. The analogy for me really is like sailing on a small sailboat. The forces of the wind and the tides are more than we can manage. We are not in control, but we are not out of control either. We have a small sail, we have a small keel, we have a small rudder with which we can guide ourselves more often than not safely to shore. And in good company, we count with an affirmative faith in each other, in guiding each other and voyaging with each other to the safety of the next shore. Do not be terrified. Do not be scared beyond what the reality is. The reality is tough enough. But terror, and this was an act, by the way, of domestic terror, terror only works when one is terrorized. If we understand the danger and the odds, we can live affirmatively in a world that is much more beautiful than not.